Hare Krishna, dragi bhakte, hvala, da ste prišli. Začeli bomo s programom Shri Guru Vandana, obožovanje duhovnega učitelja. Hvala. Hare Krishna, dragi bhakte. Hvala, ste prišli. Sedaj pa sledi slavljenje njegove milosti Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaja. Hare Krishna. Lahko prijete kar malo bližje.
Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Svapadantikam. So thank you for inviting me to this nice remembrance celebration of His Divine Grace, Bhakti Tirtha Swami. I can recall some very nice memories or memory that I have being with Him. In fact, I would say the 3 weeks that I spent with Him traveling in 1977 were in some ways some of the most memorable times in my life, in which I had some of the best spiritual lessons. At that time, Bhakti Tirtha Swami was still a brahmachari, and he was a member of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust traveling party. What was it called? The library party, yeah. And a few of them had come to Europe in order, after going all over the U.S. and I guess Canada, they came to Europe to see what they could do distributing sets of Srila Prabhupada's books in libraries, especially at universities. So Bhakti Tirtha Swami was part of that group. It was a group of about 4 or 5 devotees. They had special funding from directly from the BBT for doing this service. And so they had just come fairly recently to Europe. They made a base in Switzerland, I believe. And then I was asked to accompany Bhakti Tirtha Swami, Ghanisham, at that time, to East Germany and Austria. And then we went, well, it's a little foggy in my mind, but at some point we went to former Yugoslavia. And that's where I lost track of him. Strange things happen. But I was asked to accompany him as a translator so I could help with German. Although we found that most of the time this wasn't required because so many of the scholars that we met spoke English. So I didn't have so much to do. What we did, a little tighter maybe, yes. What we did is essentially Sankirtan with Prabhupada's books, but instead of going on the streets, we went to universities and especially libraries and universities, but also to professors. So we went to, I believe we went to Austria first, went to a few places for about a week, and then we went to the former Deutsche Demokratische Republik, DDR. And one thing I remembered before we went into the country, I was in some anxiety because I knew that it was strictly forbidden to take any books. And that if we were found with books, it's possible we would immediately just be sent back. And this would, you know, spoil our opportunity. So I was kind of expressing this concern to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and his mood was, anyway, let's try it. Let's try it. Let's see what we can do. We had a small vehicle with it was a, how to say, the back part was kind of closed. There were no windows. And we decided, okay, we will take one banana box full of books. And we'll hope for the best. So we had an entry visa into, we were not going transit, we had an entry visa. And this is where they generally especially look, what do you have with you, you know. But what I came to realize very quickly was that Bhakti Tirtha Swami had some Shakti. And so just because his mood was, well, let's see what we can do. So then it became possible to do something. the border customs, you know, checkpoint, they were just a little bit lazy at that moment. Just didn't really feel like looking very carefully, so we came through. And so it went like that throughout our stay in East Germany. I would, Maharaj would say, let's go to this place, let's try that. And I would say, Maharaj, I don't know if we can go there. That's, you know, strictly forbidden. We have to get some papers, official this, official that. And he would say, well, let's try. Let's see what happens. And that's what we would do. I especially remember we went to University of Leipzig. And University of Leipzig, the main building was this big, ugly skyscraper building. And there was a reception, you know, booth there in the entryway. But we just kind of marched by as if we knew what we're doing. And we got in the elevator. I was really nervous. But Maharaj was, we say in English, cool as a cucumber. We just went straight to the elevator. We got in that elevator. We went to the first floor up. We got out of the elevator and we knocked on the first door that we saw. And as I remember, the first door was one professor. I think he was a sociology professor. And he was very gracious. He, please come in, yes, sit down. And so then Maharaj kind of would give his presentation. He always wore a three-piece suit, you know, suit, tie, vest, always looking very pukka. But in East Germany, African-American, you know, black skin, really stands out. But he never seemed to worry about that. He just really, you know, didn't let that ever get in his way. So he then presented the books, explained everything very nicely, and this man said, oh, this really looks very interesting. They wouldn't be interesting for me. My particular area of study, no, it wouldn't be. But I know someone this will be very interesting for. And he gave us an address. It was in another building on the campus. And we got excited. We thought, wow, we've got, you know, somewhere, somebody, we have like a recommendation. And he said, so, you know, go there. They'll surely be interested. So thank you very much. We went back outside and we went to that building. And within about a minute, we realized we'd been cheated. This man had sent us to the university police. So he sent us right into a trap. And we at first had no idea what was going on. So we said, hi, we have some books. We want to... really interesting books. These may be interesting for you. And they said, oh, really? Yes. Please, sit right down here. Let's talk about this. So then we kind of understood, uh-oh, we're in trouble. And then they said, you're in trouble. And then I kept thinking, I told him. I told him, we're going to be in trouble here. But then it was really kind of fun to watch Bhaktivedanta Swami, how he managed to sort of get out of this situation. And basically, he just did it by following, you know, our tradition. He just was super humble. He was totally humble, totally apologetic. And he said, we're really sorry. We, you know, we go to many places all over the world, and they all have different rules. And it's really hard to know what the rules are. But now that we know the rules... we're really sorry. We're really, 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 really sorry. And they just kind of, all right, get out of here, you know. Gave us our passports back and said, all right, go on. Yeah, I think, as I remember, we had English speaking. I think so. They understood his apologetic character nature in any case. And so then they let us go, and as soon as we got out, Mars said, maybe we should try over there in that building. I said, Maharaj, please. If we don't get out of here now, I don't know what's going to happen. Actually, we did meet one professor I'm pretty sure it was at that university. And he really did appreciate getting the books. He took us into his office. He closed the door. He locked the door. He said, show me these books. I want these books. And he said, but I don't have any, you know, Western money. All I have is, you know, East German marks. We said, it's okay. We don't mind. So we did distribute some books. The idea was getting standing orders, and then we were supposed to ship the books from outside. I never followed up to see how much that really worked, because obviously there were restrictions also to send books. But anyway, we did take orders. So every week, Maharaj would, at the end of the week, sit down and write a report of what we had done that week. And we didn't have computers at that time, and we also didn't have any typewriter with us. So he would write the report by hand, which he would send to the BMT. He would send one copy to BMT, one to Satsarup Maharaj, and one to Srila Prabhupada. Whether he did that or photocopied later, I don't remember somehow. Anyway, so he would make this report, and he explained to me, we need to inspire, you know, our sponsors so that they keep giving us money so that the program keeps going on. Our sadhana, his sadhana, was incredible. He would get up at 2:30 in the morning, every morning, and he would chant 42 rounds a day. That was his sadhana. I don't know how it was in later years, but at that time, that was his sadhana. And he always would say, with a chuckle, with a laugh, he would say, I'm so fallen, I have to chant this much every day. And that was genuinely his mood. And he was also eating very, very little. And he was chanting a lot. Plus, then he was going out and distributing the books. And he was in an amazing mood of sort of training me up to do the same thing, so that after just a few days, he would say, okay, now it's your turn, you know, go over there and, you know, go meet somebody and see what you can do. I'd say, I'm not ready yet, I don't know what to do, just try it, you know. So he was always encouraging that in that way. And one thing about that I always appreciated was, although he was in so many ways so senior to me, he always treated me as an equal, as a friend. He was always always very warm and confiding and encouraging and always teaching. He was always the special lesson that I always appreciated from him. He explained that, he said, wherever I go, I think Krishna must have put me here for a purpose. I don't know what it is, but there's only one way to find out, and that is to try to serve Srila Prabhupada. And so this was so deeply his determination that somehow or other he would please Srila Prabhupada by distributing his books. And in that spirit, everything else really didn't matter. Physical security and so on, it just didn't matter. Krishna will take, that will be taken care of by Krishna. If Krishna wants me here to do this for my Guru Maharaj, then Krishna will take care. That was his mood. So it was very wonderful. This was in 1977. It was in the month of September, I guess end of August, beginning September, like that. We finished this little tour and we drove back to the main temple in Germany, Schloss Rettershof. And within a few minutes of coming back into the temple, someone told us, "Have you heard? Srila Prabhupada is in London." "What? Prabhupada is in London? How is it possible?" We had been hearing that Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, that he was very sick, and that devotees were talking about how he would possibly be leaving soon. Suddenly, out of nowhere, they're saying, "No, he's in London." "Huh?" "Well, if he's in London, we're going to London." So we just, grabbed whatever prasadam was lying around, and we jumped back in our car, and we drove to London. And then, as soon as we got to London, someone reported to Srila Prabhupada that Ghanisham is here. And because Prabhupada had already recognized what amazing service he was doing, immediately he called for him, bring him in. So because I was his sidekick, I was his assistant, I was invited to also come in to Prabhupada's room. So there was just Ghanisham Bhakti Tirtha Swami, there was Tamal Krishna Goswami, there was his servant, Upendra, and there was Dwarkesh and myself and Prabhupada. So it was a very small kind of intimate mood. And it was, for me, very shocking. This, I had seen Prabhupada, I think, that morning, but it was still so shocking for me to see Prabhupada in the condition that he was. He was literally just skin and bones. But he was sitting up. He was sitting in a rocking chair. And so we were invited in, and Ghanisham had just finished writing one of his reports, one of his weekly reports. So he brought that and he read it out to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was listening. And two or three times he interrupted and commented. And he told Tamal Krishnamurti, "Note this down." So he was taking notes on his comments. And at one point, Prabhupada was, tears were coming from his eyes. And all this time, I'm just staring at Prabhupada, trying to think how to think. Because it was kind of too many thoughts and no thoughts. It was amazing to see Prabhupada in this mood. He expressed what it was, is that Bhakti Tirtha Swami had been describing how in East Europe, in East Germany at this time, there was not so much food in the supermarkets. And that's when Prabhupada was crying. He said, and then he commented, he said, because of their atheistic government, therefore, people have to suffer like this. And he was thinking not of, some spiritual whatever. He was thinking about just their physical, their well-being. And this was something that I've never forgotten. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was, giving this report. And it was obvious that this was really, really satisfying to Srila Prabhupada. So, I sort of lost track of how this all happened. I guess it was after this that we went together to Yugoslavia. And which town was it? Oh, we went, I think it was in Skopje. where I lost him. We had agreed. By now he said, okay, you go that way, I'll go this way. And we'll meet back here at such and such time. Okay, so I went my way, he went his way. I came back at the right time. He did not come back. And he didn't come back, and he didn't come back. And I kept waiting and kept waiting and kept waiting. And he wasn't there. So I didn't know. And he didn't have anything with him. I had the vehicle, I had the key, everything. Anyway, somehow or other, as I remember, I couldn't think of anything else to do except drive back to Germany, which probably wasn't the best thing to do, but that's what I did. Eventually, we found out where he was, and he was okay. He just sort of didn't care too much about, these arrangements for the body. So he was just kind of distributing books. He was a little too transcendental. No, he wasn't too transcendental. He was. So, I learned a lot from him at that time, and especially from that time. And of course, later we saw how incredibly powerful his preaching was after so many years, took sannyas, and he started coming to this part of the world. And he would dance like a madman. And he was writing books. He was deeply interested to attract different sorts of people to Krishna consciousness. So with his writings, he was doing that. Some of it became a bit even controversial, but his mood was somehow or other, let's get the message out there. And so he became really one of the prominent leaders of our society. I remember one lecture he was giving in Mayapur. And I don't remember the specific content, but it was essentially, we have to get serious, But he had really, really, really worked himself up. So he was really excited, and he was practically shouting to the devotees, we have to surrender. And so he was like shouting, and then suddenly he said, don't mind me, I'm just preaching to myself. Sort of, and then he was sort of back to normal. So he always had this amazing, jolly spirit and openness to just all kinds of people. I think all of us who had his association always felt a special kind of warmth in his presence, isn't it? So I'm always cherishing his memory and the things I feel I've learned from him as a godbrother. His selflessness in serving Srila Prabhupada is matchless, and so he's certainly one of our acharyas in so many respects that we can all take inspiration from. His Holiness Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaja ki Hare Krishna. Thank you all. So with your permission, I'll slip out, but thank you for having me.
Is Gaur Krishna Kshetra Prabhu key?
Kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyaiva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaja ki jai. It's been very interesting to hear the stories from Krishna Kshetra Prabhu. Bhaktivedanta Maharaj is a very special person in our society. Myself, I had just very fleeting encounters with him. I think I saw him for the first time in Mayapur in 95 at Mangalarati. He was some fantastic presence, fantastic dancer in magenta, dhoti and kurta. Flowing, sparkling in the dawn, in the dark, ecstatically dancing and singing. So I was thinking, who is this? Who is that? And they told me, this is Bhaktivedanta Swami. I very much appreciated his approach. He founded IFAST Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology. I like the idea. I thought there was a whole web page, I don't know, maybe it's still there. And he actually attracted many intelligent people. And the idea was the connection or application, which is the whole point of Vedic science. This is not theory, this is not just party line. This is not dogma. This is something, this is technology. This is vidya, raja vidya. Vidya is something practical, something that changes lives and can actually bring benefit to everybody. So that was emphasis of Bhaktivedanta Swami. And that's why he wrote his books, The Spiritual Warrior. They practically have a cult following. You can see that in many parts where they are there. There are many people who are not devotees or not much connected to devotees, but they love these books and they read these books, and some become devotees thanks to these books. So I think this is both ingenuity of Bhaktivedanta Maharaj and also his compassion, that he wanted to show the world how to improve, how to benefit their lives through the science of Krishna consciousness. And the other things I think somebody else can say, is just something that really, really fascinates me. This idea that Maharaj was turning the principles, or he was applying theory, using theory to change lives, to produce some transformation in people, which is the idea, which is what we all want to do and to help others do. And of course, there's a whole ocean of katha you can discuss about his qualities. He was a king, right? He was a king. He was so many things. He was so many amazing things. But I guess I give it to you. Are the only disciple here? Somebody else is here from.
There is one Mataji from Slovenia, but she doesn't live in Slovenia.
Yeah. it's nice he was coming here. He was giving his lectures. He was giving his seminars here. And if you remember, they were also quite practical. They were not a theory. He would call people up and he would have people actually do some searching of their consciousness, and practically on stage he would have people undergo some transformation or find some things out about themselves. Yeah? Which until today remains revolutionary. Yes. I don't think we still have anything like this. Anybody, you know, right in the middle of the lecture, you know, calling people up and then just having them discover something. This is very powerful.